When he told them of the spear piercing Odin's side, the bard shrieked in pain, as the Allfather himself had called out in his agony, and all the men shivered, imagining his pain. They found the Skraeling the following day, which was the Allfather's own day. He was a small man, his long hair black as a crow's wing, his skin the color of rich red clay. He spoke in words none of them could understand, not even their bard, who had been on a ship that had sailed through the Pillars of Hercules, and who could speak the trader's pidgin men spoke all across the Mediterranean. The stranger was dressed in feathers and in furs, and there were small bones braided into his long hair. They led him into their encampment, and they gave him roasted meat to eat and strong drink to quench his thirst. They laughed riotously at the man as he stumbled and sang, at the way his head rolled and lolled, and this on less than a drinking horn of mead. They gave him more drink, and soon enough he lay beneath the table with his head curled under his arm. Then they picked him up, a man at each shoulder, a man at each leg, carried him at shoulder height, the four men making him an eight-legged horse. And they carried him at the head of a procession to an ash tree on the hill overlooking the bay, where they put a rope around his neck and hung him high in the wind, their tribute to the Allfather, the Gallows Lord. The Skraeling's body swung in the wind, his face blackening, his tongue protruding, his eyes popping, his penis hard enough to hang a leather helmet on, while the men cheered and shouted and laughed, proud to be sending their sacrifice to the heavens. And the next day, when two huge ravens landed upon the Skraeling's corpse, one on each shoulder, and commenced to peck at its cheeks and eyes, the men knew their sacrifice had been accepted. It was a long winter, and they were hungry. But they were cheered by the thought that, when spring came, they would send the boat back to the Northlands, and it would bring settlers and bring women. As the weather became colder and the days became shorter, some of the men took to searching for the Skraeling village, hoping to find food and women. They found nothing, save for the places where fires had been, where small encampments had been abandoned. One midwinter's day, when the sun was as distant and cold as a dull silver coin, they saw that the remains of the Skraeling's body had been removed from the ash tree. That afternoon it began to snow, in huge, slow flakes. The men from the Northlands closed the gates of their encampment, retreated behind their wooden wall. The Skraeling war party fell upon them that night, 500 men to 30. They climbed the wall, and over the following 7 days they killed each of the 30 men in 30 different ways. And the sailors were forgotten by history and their people. The wall they tore down, and the village they burned. The longboat, upside down and pulled high on the shingle, they also burned, hoping that the pale strangers had but one boat, and that by burning it, they were ensuring that no other Northmen would come to their shores. It was more than 100 years before Leif the Fortunate, son of Eric the Red, rediscovered that land, which he would call Vineland. His gods were already waiting for him when he arrived, Tyr one-handed, and Grey Odin, Gallows God, and Thor of the Thunders. They were there. They were waiting.
Chapter 4. Let the midnight special shine its light on me. Let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me. The Midnight Special. Traditional song. Shadow and Wednesday ate breakfast at a country kitchen across the street from their motel. It was 8 in the morning, and the world was misty and chill.
"You still ready to leave Eagle Point?"
asked Wednesday at the breakfast bar.
"I have some calls to make if you are. Friday today, Friday's a free day. A woman's day. Saturday tomorrow. Much to do on Saturday."
"I'm ready. Nothing keeping me here."
Wednesday heaped his plate high with several kinds of breakfast meats. Shadow took some melon, a bagel, and a packet of cream cheese. They went and sat down in a booth.
That was some dream you had last night,
said Wednesday.
Yes, it was.
Laura's muddy footprints had been visible on the motel carpet when he got up that morning, leading him from his bedroom to the lobby and out the door.
So, why'd they call you Shadow?
Shadow shrugged.
It's a name.
Outside the plate glass, the world in the mist had become a pencil drawing executed in a dozen different grays with, here and there, a smudge of electric red or pure white.
How'd you lose your eye?
Wednesday shoveled half a dozen pieces of bacon into his mouth, chewed, wiped the fat from his lips with the back of his hand.
Didn't lose it. I still know exactly where it is.
So what's the plan?
Wednesday looked thoughtful. He ate several vivid pink slices of ham, picked a fragment of meat from his beard, dropped it onto his plate.
Plan is as follows. On Saturday night, which, as I have already remarked, is tomorrow, we shall be meeting with a number of persons preeminent in their respective fields. Do not let their demeanor intimidate you. We shall meet at one of the most important places in the entire country. Afterward, we shall wine and dine them. There will be, at a guess, 30 or 40 of them, perhaps more. I need to enlist them in my current enterprise.
And where is the most important place in the country?
One of them, my boy. I said one of them. Opinions are justifiably divided. I have sent word to my colleagues. We'll stop off in Chicago on the way, as I need to pick up some money. Entertaining in the manner we shall need to entertain will take more ready cash than I happen to have available. Then, on to Madison.
I see.
No, you don't. But all will become clear in time.
Wednesday paid and they left, walked back across the road to the motel parking lot. Wednesday tossed Shadow the car keys. He drove down to the freeway and out of town.
You're going to miss it?
He was sorting through a folder filled with maps.
The town? Nah. Too many Laura memories. I didn't really ever have a life here. I was never in one place too long as a kid. I didn't get here until I was in my 20s. So this town is Laura's.
Let's hope she stays here,
said Wednesday.
It was a dream, remember?
That's good. Healthy attitude to have. Did you fuck her last night?
That is none of your damn business. And no.
Did you want to?
Shadow said nothing at all. He drove north toward Chicago. Wednesday chuckled and began to pore over his maps, unfolding and refolding them, making occasional notes on a yellow legal pad with a large silver ballpoint pen. Eventually he was finished. He put his pen away, put the folder on the back seat.
The best thing about the states we're heading for, Minnesota, Wisconsin, all around there, is it has the kind of women I liked when I was younger. Pale-skinned and blue-eyed, hair so fair it's almost white, wine-colored lips and round full breasts with the veins running through them, like a good cheese.
Only when you were younger? Looked like you were doing pretty good last night.
Yes. Would you like to know the secret of my success?
You pay them?
Nothing so crude, no. The secret is charm, pure and simple.
Charm, huh? Well, like they say, you either got it or you ain't.
Charms can be learnt.
So where are we going?
There's an old friend of mine we need to talk to. He's one of the people who'll be coming to the get-together. Old man now. He's expecting us for dinner.
They drove north and west toward Chicago.
Whatever's happening with Laura,
said Shadow, breaking the silence.
Is it your fault? Did you make it happen?
No.
Like the kid in the car asked me. Would you tell me if it was?
I'm as puzzled as you are.
Shadow tuned the radio to an oldie station and listened to songs that were current before he was born. Bob Dylan sang about a hard rain that was going to fall, and Shadow wondered if that rain had fallen yet, or if it was something that was still going to happen. The road ahead of them was empty, and the ice crystals on the asphalt glittered like diamonds in the morning sun. Chicago happened slowly, like a migraine. First they were driving through countryside, then, imperceptibly, the occasional town became a low suburban sprawl, and the sprawl became the city. They parked outside a squat black brownstone. The sidewalk was clear of snow. They walked to the lobby. Wednesday pressed the top button on the gouged metal intercom box. Nothing happened. He pressed it again. Then, experimentally, he began to press the other buttons for other tenants, with no response.